Welcome, listeners, to the third season of The Cozy Corner with Alexia Gordon. I'm Alexia Gordon, author and your podcast host. Tune in and join me as I chat with authors writing cozy and traditional mysteries. You won't find explicit violence, sex, or gore. You will find intricate plots, engaging characters, and brilliant writing. Thanks for listening. Welcome, listeners, to another episode of The Cozy Corner with Alexia Gordon. I'm Alexia Gordon, author and host of the podcast. Deborah Goldstein returns to the corner today to chat about her third Sarah Blair mystery, Three Treats Too Many. Welcome back, Deborah.
Thank you for having me. I'm delighted to be back.
Now, Three Treats Too Many released in August. So what are Sarah Blair and her twin sister up to this time out?
Well, things are getting better for Sarah. She never expected to be co-owner of a restaurant, but now even her Siamese cat, Rara, is looking at her differently. She and her twin sister are tangled up in red tape because Sarah owns the building and her twin sister, Chef Emily, and Emily's boyfriend, Chef Marcus, are the real people in the restaurant, but the building inspector won't give them an approval, won't even come and inspect them for the final inspection. But across the street, her greatest nemesis, Jane, has opened Jane's place, and she had no problem getting inspected. So what we have is the competitor is opened. The competitor is doing great business, especially because of the vegan recipes her young sous chef, Riley, is putting on the table. Of course, our folks are getting a little nervous. After all, the competitor is getting a head start.
Now, you brought up that one of Sarah's big concerns is the time that it's taking to get her restaurant inspected so that it can open, especially as her competition seems to have either cut through or jumped over the red tape. So how did you capture the flavor of small town politics? Research, personal experience?
It was a combination of both. When I grew up in a town that was, very big, metropolitan in the East Coast. But we moved to a small town in Michigan that was 5 miles square. So I got to see how people interrelate. Then when I later in life moved to Alabama, I spent a lot of time litigating in my career in small towns. And again, I got to see how the inner workings are. And I got to see how different subdivisions got opened while other ones down the road were having blockages of inspections and different things. So you can see how wheels get greased and sometimes they don't. I decided to take that and add to it and enhance it to make the story more fun. So I've taken my small town of Wheaton, Alabama. I've added my building inspector who may or may not be dirty. And of course, the competition has to be between Sarah, who is our protagonist, and Jane, who's, as Sarah calls, the bimbo. The one who broke up her marriage. Because remember, Sarah was married at 18, divorced at 28, and the only thing she got out of the marriage was Rara, the Siamese cat. So she started over completely. Jane seems to always be like a cat. No matter what happens, she seems to land on her feet and have another life to live.
Now, a scene early on in Three Treats Too Many shows Sarah expecting someone to mention her previous success at solving murders. So some mysteries that feature amateur sleuths don't highlight the sleuth's prior cases, while some integrate that crime-solving experience into their character's growth. So tell us about deciding to acknowledge her previous murder-solving ability.
Well, I thought that, as we know, Sarah's been growing in terms of her confidence, in terms of her abilities. And in this particular instance, maybe it went to her head a little, maybe it didn't, but she's so sure that the person who's about to praise something is gonna praise that because that's the one thing she knows she's done well in the last year. She's managed to get her mother in Two Bites Too Many off the hook of being the murderer. She's managed to get her sister in One Taste Too Many off the hook from being accused of murdering Sarah's ex-husband. So she's done these great things. She thinks they're going to be praising her for that. And to her surprise, it's not her. It has nothing to do with her that the praise comes. So she has to swallow her that feeling of, oh, I've accomplished something, because that's not the issue.
Well, I still think solving murders is an accomplishment to be proud of, even if the rest of the town doesn't say so.
I think other folks do, and especially her mother crows with pride about her daughter.
Now, you mentioned that Sarah's rival Jane hires a vegan chef to work for her. So what inspired you to choose vegan cuisine as that chef's specialty?
Well, as you know, Sarah finds being in the kitchen more frightening than murder. And truthfully, so do I. So as I started investigating for each of the books, different types of cuisine, like in the first book, I have Jell-O in a can. I mean, for Sarah, they've got to be very easy recipes. For Emily, they've got to be complex and have love. But then I started reading and talking to some friends who were vegan. And I said, you know, this is a different angle. This would be a different type of cooking Sarah would have no knowledge of. And there are really good vegan recipes out there that I could include in the book. Also, I could introduce a new element. So that's kind of where I went with it. And I started having fun because I knew nothing about it and it gave me something to research.
What kind of research did you do? Did you go to some vegan restaurants or get your friends to cook some vegan meals for you?
I talked to some of my friends who were chefs. Because of what was going on in the world, I wasn't really hitting all the restaurants, but I was hitting some of their recipes and things. And then I read, and then my biggest research element was taste. Taste was really important. Did it taste bad or did it taste good? I happen to like tofu. I happen to like certain things that would fit the recipes, but it was just a progressive piece as the book came together. In Three Treats Too Many, there are different things that I didn't know. So I either, as I said, went to chefs or there's an element of a veterinarian's practice. Well, I don't know from the top of my head, coming from the legal world, the medical world, especially animal world. So I went out and chatted a vet for a day. That's how I have to learn and do the homework. Google and shadowing seem to be my modus operandi.
Now, what was the most surprising thing you found in either your culinary or veterinary research?
I think I found how dedicated people are to what they're doing. And I found that everything that's really good has an element that goes beyond just doing the job. There's an element of care, of love, I don't know what you can call it, that goes into what they do. When I watched the veterinarians with the animals, one of the things I thought was interesting was I was watching that the vet techs and all were giving a lot of the shots. The doctor was doing things, but he wasn't hurting the animal in this particular case as much because they want the animals to trust them each time they come in. So they have different roles. They have different elements. I mean, they'll do it if they have to, but they kind of ease off. And the chefs do the same thing. They want to make good food. They want to make food that people come back to. They have to make it so that they make money or at least break even on the break ahead on the margin. But there's an element in there of caring.
And you've touched on some of the complexities of running a restaurant, and you touch on them more in your book, like the need to attract local as well as out of town customers and the challenges of trying to revitalize an entertainment district. So in future novels in the series, do you think you'll address the difficulties faced by restaurants when a public health crisis forces a shutdown?
I don't know, because the books are set before the pandemic. So if the books are continued, right now the contract goes through book 5, which will come out in 2022. And today the fourth cover, Four Cuts Too Many, was revealed, or today that we're speaking. So, and that's a 2021 book. But I think, yes, I have ideas for incidents that would not necessarily be a pandemic type thing, but would be a system, a problem that might have to result in tracing or checking out what's going on with the public. And it might result in a closing of the restaurant till they can find out, is it the restaurant's fault or is it chef error or what? I think there's lots of ways you can go, touch on the story, but keep it in the era of when the book is being written.
And for those listening, today is October 4th, and that cover reveal that Deborah referred to is on Drew's Book Musings.
Yes, it is, and I'm very grateful to her.
Now, to switch gears a little bit, Motorcycle Club. Not something you often associate with cozies. So, what inspired the Motorcycle Club?
That was an interesting one. There's two factors. One, I have a friend who he and his wife are not only motorcycle riders, they have been champions in competitions. They have built them from scratch. They have a background in them. They really, they've done Rolling Thunder. They've done all these different events tied to motorcycles. But what really cued me in is many years ago, I took a class, a community class in writing for magazines. I wanted to, they were giving a 2-week course. And there was this lovely couple. He was a teacher and she was an assistant principal. And they were, to describe them is to say they were that jolly, stereotypical, rotund couple that you see in a small town that's been around forever. And they would do anything for anybody. Anyway, we got to talking in the class. And they mentioned they were going to be missing a session, and could I give them the notes? I said yes. And I asked what they were doing, and they said, "We're going on a long ride." I said, "Excuse me?" Figuring they meant in a car. Well, it turned out that a group of the teachers had gotten together, bought different types of motorcycles. They weren't your stereotypical that you see on TV motorcyclist. They were folks who, as a group, would pick a place like, they want to go to Niagara Falls? Well, they would ride to Niagara Falls. They would tour it for the weekend or whatever they were doing, and they'd come back. So every summer they'd have a really big trip, like the Grand Canyon in the West. And it would be weeks on end, and they would have a great time. And it was a community organized club. They also, I was involved in something else through the United Way, where an agency that I was having to do some work with. And I found that one of their greatest fundraising groups was a group of motorcyclists. Now, some of them met the stereotypical look, but this group just quietly did things of raising money for the small head injury group, for the children's hospital. They would do rides and charity events. And I decided, I've got three different elements here, and if I put them together for a small town of my weed in Alabama, I've got something fun that's a little different from the typical cozy. Because I don't think I write the quite the typical cozy.
And you've given us an example of a motorcycle club that's not like the typical motorcycle gang people often expect when they hear a motorcycle.
No, some of the folks will meet the elements, but some of them are, it could be you or me on the back of a motorcycle. It could just be, it could be a neighbor next door. But I wanted to bring in the fact that motorcyclists are not all what everybody thinks from the television set.
True. And I'm thinking of my one experience trying to drive a motorcycle myself. Probably would not be me doing that, but I do remember riding on the back of my uncle's motorcycle a long time ago. That part was fun. So you never know who you're going to find on a motorcycle.
Right. And it's the same way you'll never know who you're going to find in the RV world or some of these things. Now, with the pandemic, think of how many RVs are being sold. And we know authors that are spending their lives traveling around, like Sue Ann Jaffrey is traveling around in her novel, is the name of her RV. And some other ones are doing the same thing now. So I find it very, very interesting that people you don't expect will be in a different setting. And I love putting characters into different settings that way.
Now, shifting back to food again, something that people may not expect is that vegan food can be tasty, and I say this I say people, I mean me, because I admit I like bacon a lot. But I have tasted some good vegan cuisine, so I will give them credit. So tell us about the recipes in your book. Did you create them or did you taste test them? And how did you decide which recipes to include?
A lot of it's taste testing. There's a soup in there that is a vegan soup, and I happened to be at somebody's home and they served it, and I really, really liked it. It was a crock pot butternut squash soup, and A, it was made in the crock pot, so it had to be easy, something Sarah could handle. But it was so delicious that I had asked for the recipe. And then I discovered, because one of the guests at the dinner that night was a vegan person, ate only vegan. And so that's why it had been made, because it was something she would eat. So I knew it was good. It went into the book. At the same time, I had some muffins that I saw a recipe for, so we tried them. The pumpkin quinoa muffins, and they turned out they're delicious. So I decided, well, they're going into the book. And that's kind of what I do with the recipes. I'll find something that I find either amusing or and try to make it, or have somebody make it for me so that I don't poison myself. But every recipe has been tried and true. They're just, some of them I go for to be humorous, like the Jell-O in a can one I mentioned. I just always thought that was funny.
And so your all of your recipes are guaranteed not to poison anybody for real.
Yes, as long as you don't have me make them.
So what's next for you and what's next for Sarah besides making crock pot recipes that won't kill anybody?
Well, after three treats too many, which we'll get that restaurant open and running. Finally, I think that's a it's a good safe giveaway to say that eventually it'll be open. The white tablecloth Southview. The four cuts too many will have her sous chefs, Grace Winston, Emily sous chef, going back to teach a little at the alma mater that she had, the Carleton Community College we've taught. She'll still be working for the restaurant, but she'll be teaching a course, and unfortunately, she's going to be teaching a knives course, and somebody's going to end up on the wrong side of a knife, and Sarah's going to have to step up to help her friend. If you notice, that's one of the things about Cozy Mysteries, because it's a small town, you'll either have it be that she's helping a friend, she's helping a relative. There's got to be some tie, or it could be a once removed tie, but there's got to be somebody that she wants to help. Because it's not like she's a policeman or somebody. She has to get into the mystery from the side angle. And she will be doing that in Four Cuts Too Many. And then I'm working now on the, as I said, the fifth book that they've contracted for, Five Bells Too Many, which will be five Southern belles competing for the perfect wedding.
Oh my, lots of opportunity for terrible things to happen at a wedding, especially when people are competing to have the best one.
Yes. And I'm having fun with it because my idea of writing this series, as you know, Alexia, is pure fun. Like you, I come from a different background that I didn't start writing till later for these fun books. And these are things I enjoyed reading. These are things that made me relax, and I wanted to share that feeling with readers. Knock on wood, it seems like it's happening. People are finding that the Sarah Blair series is entertaining. It has whodunits that I think challenge them. And just like in Three Treats Too Many, it offers something a little different. There'll be social issues without beating you over the head, or it'll introduce you to characters and things that'll make you think about people a little bit differently.
And where can readers and future readers buy a copy of Three Treats Too Many so they can get started following Sarah Blair and her sister and her friends?
Well, they can ask any of their indie bookstores to get them, but they are on Amazon. They are on, Barnes and Noble. Every single big, every single of the big box stores has them. But Amazon and Barnes and Noble are the easiest ones that I can think of. And it, do you need links for them, or are you okay with that?
Oh, sure. If you want to send me some links, I'll be happy to post those in the show description.
And they can always find out two other places to go. My web, I have a website, www.deborahhgoldstein.com, and there's always information there about everything. And they can also follow me in my newsletter, which they can sign up for from there. I have giveaways and other information on my newsletter, which comes out every couple of months.
And you also have a lot of upcoming events posted on social media. So where can they find you on Facebook or Twitter, in order to?
They can find me at Deborah H. Goldstein on Twitter. They can find me on Facebook at www.facebook.com/Deborah H. Goldstein author. And I will be just the next few weeks, I will be virtually in Nicola's in Michigan with other cozy authors. I will be at Murder by the Book in Houston. I will be at Boulder Books in Boulder, Colorado. I'm in Atlanta one day, and then I'm in Memphis in Nicola's, excuse me, novel. So I'm re making the rounds, but I'm also doing it this time with friends. So if they want to hear some cozy authors in Nicola's, it's Vicki Fee and Molly McCrae. If it's in Boulder and in Houston, it's going to be Margaret Misty Schumer, Becky Clark, Cynthia Kuhn, and Scott Graham. We're mixing genres there. And at Novel on the October 19th, it's going to be Maddie Day and Edith Maxwell, who's the same person, Kelly Oliver, and myself, which will be an interesting contrast because we have cozy and historical mixed together on that day. But if they check out my website or they check out my Facebook page, all of the links are there for registering. All of the events are free, except most of these bookstores are making them go through Eventbrite to register.
So, sounds like lots of fun virtual book parties all over the country.
Yes, and I'm having a blast. I've in January when Two Bites Too Many came out, I literally did a tour like this in 7 or 8 days, where I was flying red eyes, and I was, would do the event and rush to the airport, and it was quite hectic. I'm doing the same thing here now, but the only difference is I get to go home and sleep in my bed 2 hours later.
That makes it nice.
Yes. Yes, it does.
Hey, well, thank you for joining me again today, Deborah.
Thank you for having me. I always enjoy being with you, Alexia.
Thank you. And thank you, listeners, for tuning in to another episode of The Cozy Corner with Alexia Gordon. Deborah Goldstein, author of the Sarah Blair Mysteries, is my guest today, chatting about Three Treats Too Many, the third book in the series. I'm Alexia Gordon, your host. Until next time, listeners. Goodbye. Thanks, listeners, for joining me for another episode of The Cozy Corner with Alexia Gordon. If you enjoyed the show, please leave a 5-star rating or review wherever you listened. Follow the podcast on social media. I'm on Facebook as The Cozy Corner Podcast, and Twitter and Instagram as podcast_cozy. Now you can support me on Patreon. Become a patron for as little as $3 a month and get a shout out on an episode of The Cozy Corner. Support at higher levels gains access to patron-only posts, thank you gifts, and giveaways. Sign up at www.patreon.com/authoralexiagordon. Thank you for your support, and thanks for listening. Until next time, goodbye.